If something is really right and true, then its speciality is that people looking at it recognize it. It's a wonderful quality that is an innate part of the human soul, that ability to recognize the truth or what's right. What happens though is, for one reason or another, that ability gets broken or distorted or damaged. And so something we do which really helps is meditation. Why do we do meditation? Because it brings each and every person who meditates in touch with their essential selves. And the original state of a human being is absolutely perfect, absolutely pure, absolutely right. But we lose touch with it, we forget it, we get caught up in other things, we develop false masks, different personalities that are not really our own, to cope with the struggles that we encounter in the world, to cover up the resentments we may feel towards other people. But with meditation, you can move away from that. You turn your attention towards yourself, you emerge your original qualities, and you realize that you are very, very trustworthy, very able to trust your own self, and others are able to trust you when you do trust yourself. You become more authentic, more honest, more real, more integral as a human being. All the fragmented parts of your being start coming together to form a functional whole. And as you begin to feel this, automatically and necessarily there is an effect on your ability to recognize truth. One of the things about recognizing truth is that if there is any task that is worth accomplishing, it's always bigger than what one person can do. And if you think about it, say someone puts their name at the end of a book and say, "I wrote this book." Think about it. All the people who are involved. See, and you usually see in that book the acknowledgements. I wish to thank this editor, this researcher, this helper, this designer, all the people who went into creating a book or a film or a community, a school. Is all based on cooperation and collaboration of many people. So what we find, if we want to be really spiritually accurate, is that it's not really true for us to put our name at the end of anything, because there really isn't anything that is only done by one person. We human beings work well in teams, in groups, and it's very fluid. We come together for a particular project, that project is accomplished, we reform ourselves into other groups. Sometimes we remain together with the same group for a long period of time. A family can be that. You live your whole life together, and without cooperation, the household is not going to work. Someone has to create money, someone creates the atmosphere, someone is entertaining, someone is resourceful. All the different qualities together make up that thing called a life worth living. And no one exists by themselves. If a person does, then it means that they couldn't manage with others. And if a person is well-rounded, then what's going to be a sign of that is their ability to come into cooperation with others, to take cooperation, to give cooperation, to flow very well with this easy process. And it's all based on recognizing the needs of the situation. if we get caught up in our egos, then we become afraid to cooperate because we think that we would be exploited or we would be used. If we put aside our egos, then our focus of attention is to accomplish something worth accomplishing. And then whatever is involved, let that happen. If I have to do something that requires a speciality, let me do it. If I have to do something that requires me to be very simple, very ordinary, let me do that, but feeling equally about the two things. If I have ego, and if I have to do something that seems to be ordinary, I will not value that part of the cooperation, and I will be unwilling to do it, and then the task cannot get done. Why? Because of my ego. If I put aside my ego and I say, okay, this is necessary, I can do this, let me do it, what will happen is people become happy. It's rather like taking on the quality of the queen bee, you see. Even if all you're doing is giving good vibrations, good wishes, for the success of something, we should never feel that, oh, I don't have any qualities, I don't have any talents, and so I can't do anything, and just get depressed about it. But no, look inside and find the essence of your good feelings and then just spread that out. And in that way you're creating an environment in which something very good can happen. Because it's subtle, people sometimes think that it isn't real or it doesn't exist. But just because it's subtle, it doesn't mean that it's not real. Sometimes the subtlest things are the most powerful. Take homeopathic medicine. Each medicine is diluted and diluted and diluted. And something that's diluted 10,000 times, there's hardly any of the original substance left, but yet that is the most potent dose. And so take that analogy into the self, and even the tiniest little thing that we do, when it comes from the heart with good feelings and good wishes for the success of the undertaking, that little bit is not small, it's really very big. It's just that we need to learn to identify the power of the things that are subtle. So, here we are in a state of wanting to develop that quality of cooperation. So each and every day, you can give yourself a little assignment to take a look and see the circumstances of the drama of today. What are they asking of me today? Because I have such a huge array of capabilities and possibilities. And so for me to cooperate means I have to be able to recognize what is needed from me today and then be easy and give it, be generous and give it. And then when something is needed from another person, because I have planted the seeds of being cooperative whenever it's needed, then as soon as I give an indication that something is needed, immediately there is the return of that, and the cooperation comes easily and automatically, and that relationship with others is built up in a very beautiful way. It's not that I say to a person, I will cooperate with you if next week, if I need you, you will cooperate with me. That's very conditional. And that conditional use of our talents is based on the idea of doubt. And doubt is not going to help us. But rather, our giving of cooperation needs to have that unconditional quality. Because again, it is an investment. And so throughout your day, take a look and see if you can cooperate unconditionally with the trust and knowing that it is going to come back exactly how it's needed, when it's needed, and you will find that there is really nothing lost, but everything gained by giving just that little bit of cooperation. So here's an opportunity to practice this value of cooperation and just see the impact it has on your life at home, at work, in society. Om Shanti. Shanti. Here at the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University, we are working to create a value-based society. And so we look at the different values individually and work on them within our own selves as an individual, together with working on them in a group setting. Today, I'd like to take up the value of honesty. Now, generally speaking, when you think of honesty, the mind goes right away to honesty of the kind which means not stealing from someone else or not taking bribes. But that is an issue that we know about. The paradoxical thing is that everyone will say it's good to be honest, but yet many of those who say that will actually not be honest. And so sometimes we might ask ourselves the question, what is it within a person that enables that same individuals to say such and such a value is very good, is very honest, we should all have it, it's very suitable, of course everyone should be honest, and yet at the same time the same people will in their actual activities and affairs do something different. So today I want to take up honesty in a very different way. And that is the kind of honesty which has to do with being honest with oneself. You see, if I subscribe to a particular set of values verbally, and then in my actions I actually demonstrate other values, then this would be called dishonest. And it's not so much that I'm being dishonest with the world, of course that is there, but the more dangerous part is really that I'm being dishonest with my own self. Now I'm not saying that in a way that says, oh, people are bad, people are dishonest with themselves, people are hypocritical. No, coming from a different perspective where we recognize that this is in a way part of the current human condition. And what we want to do, and why this becomes part of a spiritual practice, is we want to look inside and see how this discrepancy is operating and how it's managing to continue to operate, and what we can do by developing internal honesty which is going to create a difference. This is where meditation comes in. What is meditation? Meditation is a spiritual practice involving deep thinking, which is very purposeful and very internal. And so you begin by turning all of your attention within. It is the soul that is actually contemplating on its own self. Because in the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University, we study a lot about the nature of human soul, human consciousness, the different aspects of the processes of intelligence, so that we can actually reach that stage where there is a complete integrity, which is demonstrated by the inner workings being exactly replicated in the outer workings, and there is no more this discrepancy between what I say and what I do. How do I achieve that? When I turn inside and I look at my own soul in an introspective, contemplative practice, what happens is we start to develop capacities inside, which is very easy to develop. It's just that people don't do it very often, but there's no reason why we shouldn't. You sit with yourself. Everybody can take a few minutes from time to time. Sit with yourself, look inside, and see in what is called the mirror of your heart. So by practicing to be introspective and internalized and focused within, we use the inner eye, which is sometimes known as the third eye, to look within and see what's really there. What do I really think? What do I really believe? And then we start to be able to notice why these discrepancies occur. If I espouse the value of honesty, if I say honesty is good, why do I say it? Do I say it because I know that other people expect me to say that? Or do I say it because that's what I really believe? One of the problems that happens to people in the world is there are many, many indications that, at least in the short term, you're better off if you're dishonest. And the problem is we have very short perspectives, and one of the things we need to learn is to have a longer perspective. Because it's also said that crime doesn't pay. But yet, people who do engage in dishonest practices seem to do rather well. And there is this belief in the world which says that if you are a good person, probably you'll get exploited, probably you'll not do very well. And so what's so advantageous about that? In other words, in the world there is a lot of lip service paid to the values, and I'm sure many of us are part of that. But what we want to try and do here is create that difference. So I have to begin to be honest with me. Now, in a way, that could be considered quite a scary thing, you know. I mean, most of us are so used to putting out our masks and doing these performances for everyone that everyone is used to. We have to demonstrate a certain persona, a certain personality, otherwise people won't appreciate us, recognize us, value us, or respect us. And because of this, we don't come from a very internalized place. And so when you start going in, it feels different, it feels unusual. But so we must persevere. So for me to become honest with myself, I have to ask myself, what do I really think? What do I really believe? And most of us, you'd be surprised, most of us really don't know. Because we just have a tendency to adopt attitudes and beliefs that everybody else has. And we don't really ask ourselves the question, what does this self really believe? Do I really believe that it's good to be honest, or do I just say it, you know? So when you go inside, one of the things that happens is you really get in touch with your soul and experience the inner qualities, which are essentially peace. Now, everybody likes to have peace of mind. Everyone likes to be at peace with themselves, and at peace with other people, and at peace with the world. And that peace is actually valuable. When you have that peace, you can sleep easy at night. And what happens if I'm dishonest is my conscience is not at peace. That means my mind is also not at peace. That means I have to block off the disturbance in my conscience. And people block it off in all kinds of ways, with eating too much, watching TV, films. All of these are ways to block off the messages that come from our conscience. And what happens when you want to go to sleep is this peacelessness comes up. You are restless inside. You don't feel that you can trust anyone. You don't really even feel that you can trust your own self. And then ask yourself the question, is this how I want to live? Because ultimately I live with myself. And do I want to be at peace with myself? Do I want to feel absolutely free inside? Or do I want to keep on playing this game, which sooner or later it really doesn't fool anyone? And it doesn't even fool our own self. So we begin to work on this. Even though it may be a bit uncomfortable, still we go inside and we say, okay, let me look at what I really believe. And what we may find is that our personality traits and tendencies are very well-established. Tendencies of dishonesty, very well established inside. And so we find there's a discrepancy between our ideals and what we really believe and what we do. And there is a discomfort in that discrepancy. So the area in spirituality that we have to work on is that discrepancy. That means, in spiritual language, that we want to change ourselves at the most deep inner place. And in India, the word we use for this is sanskaras. You see, in our intellect we have the aim of honesty, but in our sanskaras we have dishonesty, and there is a war between these two parts of our consciousness. And this war represents itself by peacelessness in our mind. And what happens when our mind is peaceless is it's very difficult for us to make good judgments and good decisions. And what happens ultimately is our dishonesty catches up with us and we get caught out. And what this will do is make us more and more lonely. You know, because if I can't be real with myself, I can't be close to my family members either, you see. Because if I would be honest with them about my dishonesty, then they would not respect me. So I have to have a mask with them. And this closeness and real love and that trust cannot exist between myself and even the closest people. That's going to make me very lonely. And I ask myself the question, is it worth it? Is that why I live, so that I can be lonely? So that I can have a peaceless mind, you know? Because after all, what is life? Life is to be able to be close to people, to be able to be trusted and valued, and to have that absolute freedom in mind. It is just so good when a person feels clean and free inside. And all the material things in the world, if you calculate it, they cannot replace that state of inner freedom, which is so valuable. So the key is I confront my own discrepancies on the inside. And what happens with meditation is very interesting. Meditation means it's a two-step process. The first step, as I mentioned before, is to turn the attention within and focus the energy of the mind on the point of light of the soul. The second step is to turn the attention beyond to the divine, to God, to the supreme, and be able to hold a connection. And that connection we call Raja Yoga. So meditation is also called Raj Yoga. What happens when the soul and the supreme soul are connected on the same frequency, the same wavelength, in a state of stillness, in a state where there is resonance? What happens is the qualities of the divine start to influence the soul itself at the level of the soul. That's very deep. And also there is a transformation that takes place, and it is indicated by a change in our sensitivities in the conscience. Very, very interesting to see this operate. And so if you do this continuously for many days, you will find that the effect is extremely clear, very noticeable, and your conscience gets fine-tuned. What happens when we have a discrepancy inside? I espouse the value of honesty, but I'm used to being dishonest. Then it means that in order to live, I have to shut down my conscience, because otherwise it would disturb me too much. So then the conscience isn't working properly anymore. And sometimes we will equate the conscience with the intellect, which means our ability to make decisions is compromised by our habit of being dishonest that shuts down the intellect. So meditation, we're waking up the intellect, and the conscience starts to get oiled, as it were. The wheels, the cogs in that machinery start working. And whenever I am doing something which is different from my espoused value, it sends up a red flag, and as we know, the conscience bites. You know, that's how it gets our attention. It has to bite us like a little dog biting us on our feet so that we notice it. And in fact, the conscience is then doing its job, because after all, in our mind, all kinds of things come up. Good, bad, ordinary, amazing, fantastic, ridiculous, all sorts of things come up. And whatever comes up in our mind has a natural tendency to represent itself in some practical activity or another. So the duty of the conscience is to let us know if we're on the right track or if we're going against our own natural inner values. So, honesty. The conscience, when it's awake, likes to be honest. It feels good. It likes the peace that it produces. It likes to have that closeness that is without barriers with my close friends and relatives and even colleagues at work. Because ultimately, life cannot be experienced as a successful experience unless we have that closeness. The ultimate suffering, really, is that internal loneliness that is the environment of a dishonest mind. So it's so worthwhile to just tackle this question. And of course, there are so many areas of the ego that come up and say, well, I can't change. I've been this way all this time. If I change, everyone's going to notice. So we feel very insecure about making changes at this level, because in the conscience, there is this residual build-up of, you could say, embarrassment. That is a great discomfort inside. However, we have to be courageous. Honesty and courage go together very, very well. in order to make a shift and become more honest than we were, takes a step of courage. And so with that step of courage, we experience that we can make slight adjustments, because there are so many times when we become unnecessarily honest, dishonest, in the sense that we could just as easily be honest. Start with that. Become able to be honest where it's easy, and you find that the ability to do that increases. And your concern about being found out or noticed is not going to happen in any kind of a uncomfortable way. But what you will find is that people gradually and gently trust you more and come closer to you, and they let you know that they know that you're doing work in a very subtle, very respectful and dignified way, because they naturally are going to be concerned about your sense of your own dignity. And this is something that you will be amazed at, because you will realize that it's coming from a place of love. And as you absorb that love from other people, the inner loneliness begins to fade and dissipate altogether. So some homework to do, some experimentation, take some time, look inside and see how much you value your peace of mind to the extent of making some adjustments in this value, and then you will see how influential it is in inspiring others to do the same. Om Shanti. Shanti. In a value-based society, perhaps one of the most important elements is the quality and value of freedom. So we in the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University are working towards creating a value-based society, and in order to accomplish that, we have to take a good deep look at all of the values. And today we would like to consider freedom. What really is freedom? There are many dimensions of freedom. One level is what we call inner freedom. It's a freedom of the spirit, a freedom to be your essential real self, a freedom to express yourself as you truly are, a freedom that exists when you are free from inner bondages. So let us take a look at what some of those inner bondages might be. And they exist on a variety of levels. First level of inner bondage is something we call the bondage of the self. Now that might seem strange to you. What do we really mean by bondage of the self? It's really the false self. How do we get a false self? It comes in a variety of ways. Some of it comes from how we grew up, and we are told by different people, this is what you are, this is your name, this is your nationality, this is your social standing, these are what the things that you can expect out of life. And it's very likely that there may be some wrong information in that. You see, when you think of yourself in terms of those external visible elements, they constitute a limitation on the soul, and that limitation reduces and diminishes your sense of your own freedom. Suppose you think of yourself as a soul. That means that you are free from those kinds of prejudicial discriminations that cause a great deal of sorrow in the world. But very few people are free like that. Can you be in your body, in your social situation, with all of your people and all your circumstances, with all of your heritage, and still be free? This is the challenge. How do you get that inner freedom? I mean, externally, it will be said, well, you belong to such and such a country, and you are of such and such a gender, and this is your education level.